this is Common Sense with Corinda Horton on 610 KDAL. The number here is 722-0839. And in studio, we have our first guest that Dan has arranged for us from Renshaw. He is part of the environmental movement, so to speak. His name is Bob Tammen. He is a retired electrician, active in the Democratic Party, and currently is opposed to copper mining in Minnesota. So welcome to our studio. I want to welcome his wife is in here as well to listen in. And so just let us know, give us a little bit of a background of what's going on. I know many people read the paper and they do have a concept of what's happening, but there might be some listeners out there that may not know what's really happening with the copper mining industry.
I think for background, we could start with just the physical geography. We have a huge, low-grade copper ore body in Minnesota. And it's not necessarily just where Pat and I live. This ore body runs into, they're exploring in Aiken County. They're exploring right now south of here in Carlton County. There are going to be leases down towards Lake Mille Lacs. So actually, it's not just a northern Minnesota issue. It's a greater state issue. And at this time, they're in the permitting process. And you know, most of us are pretty familiar with the iron mining, the taconite industry. It's a big presence in northern Minnesota. And so now they're going to start with copper mining. And my wife and I, as retirees up there, we're looking at the industry developing. And, you know, at this stage, with the knowledge I have and what we're seeing on the ground there, I'm very skeptical about copper mining in Minnesota. My position is I believe that copper mining would be a long-term liability for the state of Minnesota at the present state of our technology.
Okay, now whereabouts do you live here in Minnesota so that you can kind of get an idea of the geographics of how you got involved and why you felt so compelled to get involved in this movement?
Well, Pat and I live right in the town of Sudan.
Okay.
And we're retired now, and it's a great place to be retired. You know, we live in a neighborhood full of kids. There's always something going on, and I'd like to put in a little plug for the Sudan mine while I'm here. It's we have the Sudan Underground Mine State Park, and it's just a great place to visit. In the summertime, they have a tour roughly every hour, and so if you got kids, they'll take you down a couple thousand feet in the elevator. They take you back about three-quarters of a mile in the mine. There's a circular stairway. There's a big cavern up there where they were mining when they quit in 65, and they have some very experienced guides. They tell you all about the technology, and it was kind of complicated. It was more than dynamite and shoveling, so people would enjoy the trip. And plus, we have the University of Minnesota physics experiment. They have a neutrino detector down in the Sudan mine, and they're firing neutrinos from Fermilab at the University of, or it's near Chicago, and they have the detector down in our mine. And so apparently these neutrinos are so fine, they pass all the way through the earth, and they detect a few of them in Sudan, and they're looking for changes of state. But, you know, if people have students that are interested in physics, it's a great tour. But call ahead, because only a couple tours a day go through the physics experiment.
Well, and I actually have been down in that mine. It's been years, because I went on a field trip with my oldest son, who's now 16, so it's been a lot of years since I went down in that mine. And looking at what those miners had to go through, and just the, I'm a little claustrophobic, so going down in there, it was a little scary looking around and thinking, wow, at one time there were people working down in these mines, and how dangerous it is. Copper mining, is it going to be similar to that kind of mining, or is it going to be a very different kind of mining that occurs?
We are more likely to see open pit mining if it starts with that. We'd prefer not, because the first proposed mine will be in the Superior National Forest. And so the people that love the multiple-use Superior National Forest, there was a bill in Congress last year, which didn't get through, to transfer 6,700 acres of the Superior National Forest to Polymet. And a lot of us think, considering the value of water and wetlands, to open up an open pit in the Superior National Forest, which will be producing acid water at some stage in the process, it's not a very effective use for our natural resources. But there's also proposals for underground mining of copper. The last couple summers, there's been a barge drilling right out in the middle of Birch Lake, and they say that they're finding ore down below Birch Lake. And, of course, Birch Lake here again, we've got a multiple-use lake. It's about 13, 14 miles long, and it's a great lake for canoeing. They allow motorized use. You can go out there in your motorboat any size you want. It's got a couple of resorts on there. It's only 4 portages from the Boundary Waters canoe area, and so we like to preserve that area for what is of most value to our community, multiple use.
And so if they were to find copper under there, then it would be like, okay, let's drain this lake and let's get going.
I don't think they're going to drain Birch Lake.
Although you see what happened in Wisconsin where that lake just disappeared. That was a crazy. You remember that when the lake just kind of got sucked up and near Wisconsin Dells in that area? No, so now if they do find, what is it that you're most opposed of with the copper mining? You feel that it's an environmental issue or it's going to impact your community? I mean, what is the piece that really, really makes you think? Because, you know, I know that there's going to be people out there that are saying, hey, we got to have jobs, because that's the buzzword, and we do need jobs. So that, I guess, would be the piece that I'm assuming the big corporation is saying, that we're trying to provide jobs.
I suppose in the interest of openness, I should explain that the barge is drilling in Birch Lake, but they are not proposing to drain the lake or anything. They're proposing to have an underground mine, drill down alongside the lake, and drill under it. And so we're not very happy about that either, but we don't have any proposals to drain Birch Lake
well,
yet.
And what happens when you put a hole underneath the lake? You got to wonder. I mean, you see this happening where people go and they drill underneath, and then they've removed all of this land and all the stuff that keeps the lake there. And eventually then you have these sinkholes and you have all these other things that can occur.
You know, being we're on the subject of Birch Lake, we already have a heavy metals and acid mine drainage problem up there. And it doesn't get a lot of publicity, but we have the Dunka Pit that's just on the south side of Birch Lake. Now, 30, 40, 50 years ago, they were developing that for taconite in this copper formation laid over the top of some of the ore they wanted to mine. It was waste rock then. It's less than 1% copper. So they scraped it aside and piled it up. Well, as soon as the rain and the air hit that, it started producing acid drainage and heavy metals going into Birch Lake. And I saw the numbers. They said there was tons of nickel. It's hard to believe that just solvents could leach tons of nickel into Birch Lake. But they started working on this problem in 75. They knew they had a heavy metals problem in Birch Lake. And over the years, they've revised some drainages. They put in constructed wetlands. They had a water treatment plant. They put caps on some of the piles. But, you know, here we are. I checked the paperwork last year, and they still needed a variance for the discharge from the Dunka mine because there was still toxic runoff going into Birch Lake. And so I point that out not to bash the mining industry, but just to point out how difficult it is once these problems develop, it's difficult to clean them up. Now, Minnesota is actually pretty mining friendly. They have a variance for that runoff into Birch Lake. They can't meet Minnesota's water standards, and so Minnesota has a statute that says if it would cause hardship, the commissioner or the pollution control agency can grant a variance, and he granted a variance so they can discharge into Birch Lake. And I suppose it makes financial sense, but Pat and I have a little property on Birch Lake. We love that lake, and we're not happy. Even, I'm sure it's diluted by the time it gets down our way, but we're not happy about diluting mining company water.
Right, and then do you swim and participate in water sports inside that lake?
Well, not as much as we used to. We're getting a little older.
Yeah, but you know, I'm sure you have your family that comes by,
yes,
too, and wants to participate in that. Speaking of, I'm going to throw this out there. My grandmother lives on a lake, and there's a farmer that is right across there, a pig farm. And about 10 years ago, all of a sudden, the lake just completely changed to a very strange, absurd greenish-blue color. And it all kind of filled, and then there was a foam on the lake. And so then the lake community, which I mean, we swam in that lake, we fished in that lake, I mean, we participated in a lot of activities in that lake, and to see this bubbling up in this chemical, it was a chemical from the fertilizer coming off of that farm that was across from the lake. And so they formed a committee, and they tried to, you know, try to work with it, and it appears that the lake has, you know, tried to recover from that. But I tell you, I'm still afraid to go in that lake after seeing that kind of stuff in there. We're going to continue our conversation with Bob Tamman and learn a little bit more about the copper mining that's taken place up in our Minnesota and the research that they're doing to explore this avenue. This is Common Sense with Corinda Horton on 610 KDAL. The number here is 722-0839. And so there's this issue of the balancing act. How do you balance the job creation and the need for jobs during economic hard times with the fact that we have to protect our health and we have to protect our environment, we have to protect the future generations as well, and looking at the environmental impact that any decision that we make, what is that going to be long term? And so instant gratification isn't maybe always the right answer. So we have to figure out that whole balancing act. How did you decide to be on the side of looking at the environmental impact that copper mining would have?
Living there and just seeing the problems we've had over the years, and you know, I can't bash the mining company too hard because I got a lot of paychecks from the mines in my younger days. I served an apprenticeship at Minntac U.S. Steel's plant, and I got a decent education. I made the rest of my life, I made a decent living off of the skills I picked up there, and still, as I looked there, I saw the problems that come from mining, and I guess I have to admit to a certain extent I might be part of the problem, because doing electrical work, I go to our lubrication room once in a while. They'd send me down there to fix some relays or some timers that weren't working, and I'd see those 50-gallon barrels of lubricant. And you know, 20 years later, what do we find? We find out that the mining companies were taking those barrels out back, lead-contaminated grease, and burying them in their little personal landfills. And you know, when I was doing my job, I just went down there and I got things running again. I didn't ask where the barrels came from. I didn't ask where the barrels went. Somebody else took care of that. Well, now we've reached a stage where somebody else isn't taking care of it. We're taking care of it. The taxpayers had to clean up that barrel dump at reserve. I think that was a $16 million shot. And so as I criticize a mining company, it's just the reality that we've created some problems over the years. And I suppose I could make one more statement that it might be a little controversial. I believe the state of Minnesota is incapable of regulating the mining industry. And I could probably give you a few examples that we've seen up north. I'd start with the leaking tailings ponds. I think all the operating taconite plants have tailings ponds, and all of them leak. We've had the dust problems, we've had the barrels, and I mentioned, I think, the variances, that if they can't meet standards, they get a variance. The other issue that we've seen up north is with permits for discharging water. Now, I think typically a permit should run about 5 years. So, you know, Minntac's tailing plant, they got a permit in 87, expired 92. So the state of Minnesota says if you apply for renewal of your permit, you can run on the old permit until the new one is acted upon. Now, if you do the math, the permit expired in 92. I checked last year, they're still running on that expired permit. Now, I'm just a little skeptical. I don't believe it would take the state of Minnesota 16 years to process that permit. I think they're just kind of looking the other way, while Minntac discharges on a permit that's pretty liberal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard when you become an elected official. I'm sure that there are certain groups and organizations that donate to campaigns of both parties, and then they're in those offices, compliments of many of the people who are part of that, and then also what politician wants to take away somebody's job? I mean, that whole piece, and we know that, and so that makes it, but yet, what is the long-term effects?
I like to talk about jobs As I say, I had good jobs in the mining industry, but we saw a big downturn in the mid-80s, and the mines haven't really contributed jobs the way they used to.
Let's talk about a little bit more of that when we get back from our news break. We are visiting with Bob Tammen. He's a retired electrician, active in the Democratic Party, and currently opposes copper mining in Minnesota. This is Common Sense with Corinda Horton on 610 KDAL. We are here in studio visiting with Bob Tammen. He's a retired electrician, active in the Democratic Party, and currently is opposed to copper mining in Minnesota. We have Dan from Renshaw on the line. I want to thank you for my wonderful guests that you gave me.
Oh, don't thank me. Thank Bob for coming in on this crispy morning. I have a couple of comments, and then I have some questions for Bob because he knows much more about this issue than I do. First of all, my comment is there are only a few places where you can go and you step out of your car and you take a big breath of air, and there's something about the air. It's sweet and it just vitalizes you. It's like those of us that live in metropolitan areas, you just feel like, I've never smelled air like this. It's just so pure. And it just vitalizes you. And then there's places where you can actually go and put your knees down on the ground and drink the water, ice cold water. That's sweet. Tastes like no water on earth. And that's in northern Minnesota, in the cedar swamps, just north of where this proposal is. And I think we need to, this is a very, very sacred area up there, and we need to protect it, and from anything that's going to, change that, because we need those places to survive on Earth. It's almost like the place where the water starts. And many people, Native Americans, have said that the Boundary Waters area up there is a place where everything starts. And if you mess it up there, then it goes downstream. But anyway, I have some questions here. And I also want to say, you know, even when they come down to Aiken County or they come down to Carlton County, and they start to do some development, and you have a nice house in the country, and you have a well maybe 250 feet deep, the day you turn on your sink and you can't drink the water out of your well, it's not far away. And the day that you're trying to sleep at night, but the smell from the industry is coming into your house, what good is your $350,000 home that you've invested in rural Carlton County or Aiken County? Those homes are going to be worthless. They can impact you from a long ways away. And once you contaminate the aquifer, it's all over. It's almost impossible to change. And in other areas of the United States, the aquifer is already contaminated. So we need to protect that. My question is, I have three questions. Is there a website where people can go online to get more? I know this is a very technical issue. I think people need to educate themselves on this issue so that they can make a rational approach and then help out whatever side they think they should be on. But is there a website? Is there a phone number? And what is this company? Is it an American company? Where are the company's investors from? And do they have a history of impacting the environment in other places? I'll hang up and listen to these.
All right, well, thanks for your call, Dan. Bob, you've got three questions. Do you know any of the answers to those?
Well, you know, there's a lot of websites out there. I'd probably say the best one right now, if people want to get a broad range of information, a lot of good links, go to Save Our Sky Blue Waters. And if you can stand to read a few economics reports without your eyes glazing over, as I recall, you go down the middle of the page and there will be a Powers report, a Chambers report, and because if you're going to talk environment, you have to talk jobs nowadays. That's the reality of our political situation. And I think if you go to SOS Blue Waters, Save Our Sky Blue Waters, you'll find a lot of links there to get the information that you ought to have to make a decision. I don't have the phone number with me for the second question. For the third question, PolyMet has been around for a few years. It started out as a penny stock in Canada. It pumped up for a little while. Now it's back to being a penny stock again. Somebody commented that they don't have a lot of mining experience, that they've never operated a gravel pit. That's kind of a snipey remark, I guess. But anyhow, that is the fact. They're a Canadian penny stock.
Okay.
And Pat and I went to their annual meeting last year just to see what's going on out there in Vancouver. And, you know, they're trying to get the finance together. They're going to be using our resources. And I guess as a former miner, the one thing that I didn't care too much for about PolyMet is that they acquired the old LTV site for less than the cost of scrap. You know, LTV went bankrupt, and it went through the bankruptcy process. A lot of my fellow miners, it was typical they lost half of their pension and all of their health care. Now, you take a person that's getting up in his 50s, and all of a sudden you're faced with this. You take an early retirement, lose your health care. Well, there's a lot of people in that area lost half their pension, all their health care, and yet PolyMet picked up that plant, which they've estimated to be worth between $200 and $400 million replacement cost. They bought that for less than the price of scrap. And so I approach it as a miner. Why should we get bankrupted out of the pensions we've worked for so a penny stock from Canada can acquire our assets, which they did?
That's horrible. We have another caller on the line. It's Greg. He's got a question. Do you have a question for Bob?
Well, kind of in a form of a question. I've been led to believe through my sources that the tailings would be supposedly contained, but I'm looking at what happened with that coal-fired power plant that they promised to contain the tailings in Tennessee, and I'm told that if this is not contained, we'd have an acid runoff going into the Partridge River, which would be flowing into the St. Louis River and then spilling their contents into Lake Superior. And you know my concern about Lake Superior, and I think that anything that adversely affects the largest source of fresh water going into Lake Superior on the United States side is a very serious thing to think about, that we shouldn't be thinking of this in terms of, well, maybe it'll work, because my understanding also is this limestone treatment of the acid hasn't ever been proved in another area, and I think Lake Superior is too important to national security be taking a chance until they could prove this technology somewhere else. I was wondering what Bob could tell us about that, about coming in the St. Louis River, because he's been talking about the areas north, but people got to know this is the watershed of Lake Superior, right, Bob?
That's a good point to bring up, Greg. I guess I wasn't very precise on it. I guess I could mention right now we have 6 operating taconite plants, or maybe one or two are shutting down with the downturn in the economy. We got 6 plants that can leak into 3 different watersheds. We're in the Lake Superior watershed here, where PolyMet is. Then the Copper Formation runs across the Laurentian, so that water would go north through the Boundary Waters Canoe area into Canada. Then the other watershed is the Mississippi off on the west end of the range. And so that the plants off on that end will drain into the Mississippi River. But that's a good point about the water running into Lake Superior. And you mentioned limestone. And, you know, we had an adventure right in Sudan. You know, Pat and I, we love our little underground mine there. It's a great place to visit. Mm-hmm. But a little water runs into that mine, so they have to pump that water out. And they discovered a few years ago that that water had copper and cobalt contamination. And so, well, their first solution is to run it through wetlands, which we got quite a few wetlands, let the wetlands take out the heavy metals. And then they started treating it with, I believe it was lime, with some mechanical process, and they discovered that the lime treatment was methylating mercury. And then the question was asked, well, how come we just found out now that we've got a mercury problem in the Sudan mine? And the DNR says, well, we weren't required to test for it years ago. And to me, that's a little troubling. It tells me that, you know, the DNR isn't looking to protect the people up there in Sudan from the problems in the mine. They weren't looking for mercury. And I think if you live in northern Minnesota, you have to be looking for mercury. So now we've got a mercury problem, too.
Well, that's kind of my point, that there's some aspects to this that are never been really fully explained to the public, that if this proposal goes through and their best case scenario doesn't work, we will have something that will affect the St. Louis River and evidently it's irreversible. This would be something that a decision that will not be just for generations. It'll be the end of time, as there's no way to stop once it's in the river.
Well, you brought up an interesting point, Greg, about
generational thing. It's not just a jobs for a short time. This is national security. You know about the barrels dumped by the Corps of Engineer of radioactive and chemical waste.
Right.
We have to think about this lake as a national security concern, and everything that could affect it adversely should be looked at as a national concern, not a regional job creation. I guess that's kind of the end of my comments. But thank you for your efforts too, Bob.
All right, we appreciate your call, Greg. We are here talking with Bob Tammen, and he is a retired electrician, active in the Democratic Party, and is currently opposed to copper mining in Minnesota. What Greg was talking about is the waterways and how it affects. How, if copper gets into our water system, or the acid that you were talking about, what are the effects of that? Do we know what the effects are at this time?
You know, one of the first effects we see from copper is not necessarily the effect on us, because we can tolerate a good little bit of copper as human beings. The first effect is on aquatic organisms. Copper is poison to them. And so, like with the Sudan mine, copper coming out of that mine, we're only a couple of miles from Lake Vermilion. The East Two Rivers runs right around past the mine there, so the water's into Lake Vermilion. So that's why it's a special concern to us. And you know, Greg mentioned tailings ponds, and of course that's been in the news a lot lately with the ash ponds collapsing in Tennessee, and we had that one ash pond collapse at Taconite Harbor a few years ago. But our tailings ponds are made with coarse tailings taconite, and they're leakers. Now, Greg mentions the possibility of PolyMet having a leaking tailings pond. The tailings pond that PolyMet is going to use is already leaking. It's leaking right now. They acquired it from LTV, and LTV went bankrupt. It transferred a couple times since then. It's never been completely cleaned up, and it exceeds Minnesota's standards, but they're letting it go.
Well, we've got to take a commercial break. Appreciate you having you in the studio, Bob Tammen. He's here to talk about the copper mining exploration that they're considering. And we are listening. You are listening to Common Sense with Corinda Horton on 610 KDAL. And the number here is 722-0839. Hi, this is Common Sense with Corinda Horton on 610 KDAL. And we are here with Bob Tammen. He is here to talk about his opposition to copper mining. And during the break, I was talking a little bit with him about what exactly is a tailings pond.
Well, Corinda, our ore bodies in northern Minnesota in the taconite industry run between 20 and 30% ore. That tells you right there you've got over 70% waste. And it's ground up, and it's at that stage, you know, it's tailings. Now, some of the tailings are very coarse, and some is fine as face powder. And so the problem is how they handle that. Well, traditionally, most of the mines, they take the coarse tailings and make a huge dike, and they pump the fine tailings into the pond they've created. And so over the years, you look at the size of those pits in the range, they're just humongous. And so we have a tremendous amount of waste in our tailings ponds. And the engineering problem with tailings ponds is that they leak. They're made out of coarse tailings, like coarse gravel. You know, and maybe one or two of them have a clay dike, impermeable, but most of them are just made out of coarse tailings, and they leak some millions of gallons a day. And so you're hopeful that it's diluted by the time it gets into our public waters. Some are not. I mentioned U.S. Steel's Mintac tailings pond. I believe that's high in sulfates, high in chlorides. That's on the other side of the Laurentian, so that's going towards Canada. But some of the ponds are on our side. And we know the St. Louis River is high in sulfates, and so I think we should be doing more research to see what these tailings are doing to our environment. And I like to bring up the point of, if we think back 20 years ago, how big was your cell phone? You know, the company gave me a cell phone 20 years ago. It's about the size of a shoebox, and I wear size 12 shoes. Well, nowadays, our technology has gone. It's a little dinky thing. But if you look at the problems we've had in northern Minnesota with our tailings, they're leaking these sulfates and these chlorides. How has the technology improved in those 20 years to take sulfates and chlorides out of our tailing water? It hasn't, and I think we should be devoting our technology to finding problems for that. And when we talk about technology, once in a while I throw out the comments about the IRRB, Iron Range Resource Rehabilitation Board. You know, they get quite a bit of money through taxes, and I think that should be going to technology and to local communities.
Yeah, what exactly is their role? I mean, I know I've heard people who have been members of that, and you know, they put that on their resume and they put that on their political literature and different things like that. But what is it? What is their role and their purpose, and the fact that the taxpayer is paying for their service?
The Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board, I believe, get most of their money. It comes through the state from the taconite production tax. I think the tax now is probably around 230. It changes from time to time for political reasons, economic reasons. And so they get that money to spend in the taconite-affected area. And as someone who lives in a small mining town, Sudan, I'd like to see that money going to our local schools, local community development. But, you know, Pat and I have been to meetings within about the last year or so, and we've seen $8 million rebated to the mining companies. Now, up until the last quarter, the mining companies, they were running flat-out big profits. And so I'm not beating up on the mining companies. I'm just saying if we've got money to give to anyone, that $8 million could have done a lot of good for our local school districts.
Well, we have a caller on the line, so we're going to go ahead and take that call here. Don, you're on the Common Sense Show. Hi.
Well, I just driving along, and I heard Bob speaking, and one question for Bob. I'm an individual that believes in a higher being and a creator, and that I believe that the Iron Range was blessed with copper, palladium, gold, or platinum, gold, iron ore.
Oh, out of the creator to why?
My opinion is that he gave us an intellect, and the intellect has allowed us to coexist in those areas and habitat, employ people, pay for schools, pay for roads, created an economy of scale, and still coexist around our area. Has there been problems? Yes, there's problems. And I continue, if old quarters coexist with those minerals and survive and live in the beauty that he's given us.
Is there anything else you want to add, and then I'll let Bob comment?
No, that's fine.
All right, I appreciate your call, Don. Okay, so Don had a lot to say there. What is your response to that?
Well, it looks to me like he wants to use mining as a jobs creation engine for northern Minnesota. And I just think back to my own experience when I went to work at Mintac. I think the numbers are that the average employee produced 6,000 tons of product per year. That's in 69. You look at the numbers now, they're producing around 13,000. Productivity has doubled, and I'm sure that's a good thing. But with that goes the fact that they're using half as many people to produce their product. And, you know, as someone familiar with the farming community, you'd understand that you go down to southern Minnesota, to our neighbors out west, you see these big farms. The farms have been prosperous the last few years, but their communities are withering away.
You know, we're going to run out of time. Are you willing to stick around for another 15 minutes or so that we can ask, do you have the time?
Sure.
Okay, great, because I think that we should have another 15 minutes so that we can close up our conversation, and if there's anybody else that's out there that had a question for you, I'd love to keep you around. I don't normally do this, but I can see that our conversation is not quite done yet. We've been visiting with Bob Tammen here. He's a retired electrician. He's also looking at the copper mining industry, and he's questioning it, deciding, you know, really, is it worth it? That's the phase that I hear that you're in, that you're exploring it. You're saying, you know, let's take a look at this. Let's stop for a minute and figure out if this is the best thing for us to do environmentally. And also that you're not completely opposed to how about a job in figuring out what to do with the waste? Maybe we could employ all these people and they could all work in that field. That would be great. We could have jobs and protect the environment. We've got to take our news right now at the top of the hour. And when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Bob. He'll be here just for another segment of the show. If you have a question that you were unable to ask him or you have a comment and you'd like to call in, we're going to keep him around for just a little bit longer. This is Common Sense with Corinda Horton on 610 KDAL.